This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. This is Cruise Control. My name is Rich Bradbury. It's a car show here on BFM. In the studio with me, as usual, is Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my. Say hello.
Hello, Mr. Expat.
Hello. And as usual, across from me right now, it's the man with the news, Mr. Arif Ruse.
Hi, Richard.
This is a show in two parts. In part one, we've got news and a feature later on. But of course, we've got news and car launches coming up in this segment of the show. Take it away, Mr. Ruse, the man with the news.
I love that intro. Anyway, the first big news that we've got today is actually that Renault and Fiat Chrysler-owned automobiles might actually be merging. So Fiat Chrysler is already quite a huge company in itself. They own almost all of the Italian marques, and they used to own Ferrari. And then you got the American side, which is Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram, and Mopar. And then Renault, they own Renault Samsung, as we talked about
some time ago.
Alpine, one of the creators of the best sports cars in the world, and Dacia.
And anyway, Datsun?
Oh, well, yeah, Nissan. Yes.
The older people know Datsun. The younger people don't remember Datsun.
But anyway, apparently, Fiat Chrysler Automobiles is trying to look for larger European presence because a lot of their profits come from the US markets, but a third of its employees are in the EU. And Fiat Chrysler has been in discussion. They've been trying to look for partnerships, European partnerships, for quite a while to try and break into the European market.
You've really done your research on this week, haven't you?
I apparently have. Yeah. They've been speaking to Peugeot, and they have also been speaking to Renault, but reports show that they are most likely going to sign with Renault. And they're going to share platforms and technology, which means that a lot of the technologies that comes in the FCA cars are going to be electrified, and the autonomous technologies, all that stuff, is probably going to come from, not Peugeot, Renault.
I take back what I said about you having prepared.
No, he prepared. He's just very confused.
He's just confused.
I threw Datsun into the mix and he's trying to figure out where Datsun going to be.
There's just so many abbreviations.
It's ridiculous, isn't it?
Which will basically make them the world's number one automaker, right?
Yeah.
Toyota might break a sweat.
Huh? Who?
Toyota.
Right.
Might break a sweat. I think Toyota is still going to be bigger.
You think so?
Yeah.
Well, the report on Bloomberg says that if FCA and Renault combined together, they will be the third largest manufacturer. But if you throw in Datsun and Mitsubishi, they'll become the largest auto manufacturer in the world, producing about 15.5 million cars a year.
Yeah, but when you take Toyota and you add in Perdua, they're still number one.
I wonder if people actually consider that, you know?
Should.
But anyway, one of the reasons why Fiat Chrysler has chosen Renault is because Renault apparently leads in electric tech. They're one of the global leaders.
They've been doing it for such a long time. So they are, actually.
Renault themselves, they do need presence in the US. They haven't actually been in the US since the 1990s.
Yeah, you don't see Renaults in any movie.
That's quite true.
That's a very good point. Yeah.
You don't see it in any movies. They're not doing product placement in any movies.
Right.
It's about time. Because the most famous cars for movies, of course, Lexus in Black Panther.
Yeah.
Then you've got Mercedes-Benz in the Avengers.
BMWs. Yeah. Some of the big Fords.
Audi with the Avengers also.
Yeah, Dodge. Yeah.
Yeah, but you got to see.
None for Renault.
Yeah, so the new cars, like the cars from Renault, the electric cars, you should start seeing them in new movies.
But they don't sound as exciting. That's the thing.
Because I don't know where you're going to put a Renault Zoe in a movie.
In a Parisian movie somewhere, you know, driving around the streets of Paris, maybe. I don't know.
So if you're talking about a movie that's set a little bit in the future, you can have a lot of Zoes running around. Also, Zoe sitting and having coffee with you.
Also, if FCA, Renault, Nissan, and Mitsubishi happens, then technically this whole, like, conglomerate, would you call it that?
Mm-hmm.
Nissan has a really big stronghold in the Chinese market. Fiat Chrysler has a huge stronghold in America. And then Renault has a huge stronghold in the EU as well as Russia, which is being seen as a rising automotive market, which means that this whole partnership could
kill Lada.
killed.
No, Lada is in the mix. Lada is in the mix.
I actually saw a Lada parked outside here the other day.
Are you sure it was a Lada, not a Fiat?
It was absolutely a Lada because I had to look three times to come. I'm looking at it.
It had a Lada badge.
It had a Lada badge in it, and it was that kind of mustard color.
Oh, that's original color, yes.
Right? And so I'm waiting to see if this car would actually start because that was half of the problem back then, wasn't it? And the guy was like, yes, it's definitely a Lada.
Did you take a picture?
I did not, and I should have done. Yeah, and I do apologize. Next time I see it, when it's somewhere else, it might be at the end of the street by now.
Yeah. Anyway,
sorry about that. A little segue there.
Moving on to our next story, Daimler CEO Dieter Zetsche has finally retired. He's been at Mercedes since 1976, which is quite a really, really long time. And if you've ever seen photos of him, he kind of looks like the Lorax.
Does he now?
Yeah. A little bit of background of Dieter Zetsche. He joined the board in 1998, where he became the CEO of Chrysler Group back in 2000 to 2005. And he had been credited for stabilizing the Chrysler Group before he became the CEO of Daimler AG and then said, let's cut our relationship off. So he was the man behind the demerger of Daimler Chrysler, which then in turn became Daimler in itself.
And Chrysler went to FCA.
He has also been credited to being the person that stopped downward spiral of Mercedes-Benz back in 2015 because he helped Mercedes post a record year for car sales and revenue.
Just very quickly, Daniel, what do you think he did in that period to kind of stop this alleged downward spiral?
In my opinion, he didn't do much.
Oh.
People always look at the leader, the man in front who does all the presentations. Mm. It's like, you know, the Apple CEO, Amazon CEO. They look at the guy who's doing the presentation on stage and say, oh, he did a fantastic job. I'm not saying he didn't do a good job. He would have done a good job. But a lot of people behind him, let's talk about Mercedes-Benz in terms of design. In the last 5 years, their design has just gone totally out of whack to create a whole new segment of buyers. Mm. I mean, why I say out of whack is because people like me are not drawn to the designs, but the younger generation are jumping into a Mercedes-Benz. These are the same people who never looked at the Mercedes-Benz before because they said, oh, old man, uncle car, you know?
That's true.
So that's a designer thing. Then you look at the materials and the kind of, you know, touch and feel they do inside the car. They've catered to a whole new generation of young people. Now, he could be part of it because he has to sign off on everything. But it's the people behind that came forward and said, hey, boss, we're going to do this. Do we get your approval? Okay. So maybe I'll give it to him for signing off on approvals. But
very generous of you.
But the real people are the designers and the product planners behind the scenes.
All right. Well, it's been said that he's largely responsible for a lot of the cutting costs back in those days.
And yeah, but you know, with a mustache like that, you can do a lot.
I mean, just a week before he retired, actually, he did leave a farewell message for Mercedes-Benz. And he said that Mercedes has to cut at least 30% more in their costs, which is quite a big message to send when you've just about to retire, right?
Because you know what? Salaries.
Yeah.
Probably. I mean, his salary alone.
Yeah.
That's a 30% cut.
Yeah.
Now he will be stepping aside for 2 years due to a regulatory rule before he becomes chairman of Daimler's supervisory board in 2021. So he's not exactly leaving, but
he's moving aside.
Moving aside.
He's going to be doing that whispering from the side. Yes.
The person that will be replacing him, Daimler's new CEO, is Ola Källenius. He's the man behind Mercedes EQ, the new electric intelligence brand that focuses on electric cars and future mobility and all that stuff. And this guy's been at Daimler since 1993 and in management since 2010. So again, a huge track record with the brand. But did you guys see the video that BMW posted?
Yeah, we got it on DSF. It just went crazy. People are laughing at it.
Did you see it?
Nah.
BMW's response was titled, Retirement is about exploring your wide open future.
Ooh,
and what the video basically shows is a lookalike is leaving Mercedes-Benz HQ, gives his entry card away, he shakes all the hands, gets into an S-Class and gets dropped at home. And as he waves the car away, the words free at last pops up on the screen. As he opens his garage, an old S-Class in the background, but then he drives off in a BMW i8 Roadster.
Cheeky. Brilliant. Speaking about BMWs, then, we should probably get on with some car launches, Arif.
Yep. Yes? So there has been a lot of photos of the new BMW X2 M35i.
This is where I'm getting confused because all of these car launches recently, or the particularly the BMW ones, they sound like code words to me.
They do.
They are code words.
It would be much simpler if it would be like, you know, the new BMW sporty thing.
Sporty crossover with
a 3.5 litre engine.
Yes, but they don't have 3.5 litre engines anymore. It's all 2 litre engines, twin turbo,
yes,
but with an output that that makes it go really fast.
Right.
So they say 35i or 45i or 40i, things like that. So it's just a numbering system to confuse buyers when they come into the showroom.
Correct, exactly.
And find, you know, they can't figure out what exactly they want.
It so feels like coordinates on a map.
Easier than using names, because names, you have to go through so many channels.
That's true.
To make sure you got the right name for the right country. Mm. It's not a bad word in certain languages.
Right.
And things
right.
like that. So numbers are very easy. Long time ago, Mercedes-Benz also had a lot of numbering, and the numbers made sense, like an E280 meant the 2.8,
right.
E260, 2.6, E200, 2 litre. Now it doesn't mean a thing.
But anyway...
Sorry, I just needed to get that out of there.
It's famous. It's, cool. Cool. It's an old man thing.
Yeah.
But BMW, there have been a lot of spy photos of the BMW X2, X4 and X5 in Malaysia. The big one to me is the X2 M35i, which is their supposedly hot hatch on stilts idea. I'm really looking forward to test driving that, especially after you drove the 20i, the base model. But also... pictures of the new BMW 1 Series.
Nice.
Really?
I like it. I think finally BMW has got a 1 Series that actually makes sense for the hot hatch market. Before this, not really that inviting.
I just can't get over the front face. It's a horrible looking. I don't like the front face.
Well, maybe because you're in a different...
But let me see that again. I'm going to have a quick look at that again. I'm just going to have a quick... I don't mind it. Yeah. It's a pretty
It looks a lot like the new A-Class. Yeah,
well, that's the thing. BMWs are not supposed to look like Mercedes.
Yeah, but you see, when you go hot hatch now, when you talk about aerodynamics and everything else, there's only so far you can go with the design. You can't really break the mold and come up with something totally different to give you all that space. I actually like the design of the car, front, back and side, but I don't like the interior because the interior looks very, very normal.
It looks like a 3 Series.
Exactly. I thought at least for the 1 Series, they'll do something different in the interior. But you see, like how Mercedes-Benz is doing cost-cutting, BMW indirectly will also be doing some cost-cutting quietly to make sure everything is shared across as many vehicles as possible. Mm.
Some details on this new 1 Series. You mentioned about not breaking the mold, right?
Right.
BMW has finally joined the mold in making the car a front-wheel drive. And it's got a 3-cylinder and 4-cylinder turbos.
Well, I would suspect all mini engines.
All mini engines. Even the engine cover looks like a mini engine. That is not a bad thing, of course. And it comes in four lines. The Advantage, the Sport, a Luxury, and an M Sport. So lots
of
choice.
What's the difference between the Sport and the M Sport?
You don't get M badges. You don't get the M Sport.
M being, I got it.
You don't get the
M being a little bit more premium.
Got it.
No.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to move on. I want to take a very short break, of course. We do have a car review coming up. It is the Honda HR-V RS. In just a couple of minutes. Of course, if you're only just joining us, we have had some news about Renault and the FCA potentially merging, Mercedes-Benz CEO retiring. Quick break, and then we'll be back with some car review from Daniel Fernandez. You're listening to Cruise Control here on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, the business station. This is Cruise Control. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm joined in the studio today, as usual, by Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my. Say hello, Daniel.
Hello, Richard.
He's so sad today. Don't know why.
Very sad. Very sad day for me.
And across the room, of course, is Mr. Arif Ruse, the man with the news.
Hello.
Oh, he sounds happy.
He sounds a bit happier than me, doesn't he?
He does. So, okay. Apparently,
the reason
Daniel,
why I'm not so happy today, I'll tell you why.
Why is that?
We've been test driving so many cars the last few months because of our Vehicle of the Year awards and all that. And suddenly for 2 weeks, I've got nothing to test drive.
Yeah.
Nothing at all. And then luckily, Honda came along.
They knocked on your door.
They knocked on my door and said the HR-V RS is available for test drive. So before we go into the RS, a little bit of history. I first saw the Honda HR-V at the Tokyo Motor Show 6 years ago. And at that time, it was a concept, and we saw it on stage, and I looked at it and said, this would do pretty well, but maybe, you know, with the hidden door handle at the back, the little, you know, sort of crossover SUV, neither here nor there look small, the rear is not that big, you know, depending on the price, so many factors. And then, you know, Honda already had the CR-V, which was doing well, their little cars were doing well, and then it looked like the Jazz had grown up a little bit, because it's almost the same height as the Jazz. But I was wrong. They launched the HR-V in 2015, runaway success. I think 70,000 units have been sold so far, maybe even more. And this has been fantabulous.
I think there's about 4 or 5 parked on my street.
Yeah, but you live in a rich neighborhood, you know?
I wouldn't say it's rich.
Yes. So the thing is now, what I found really interesting was about the HR-V is, despite its popularity, nobody came up and challenged it immediately. You know what I mean? Like for 1 year, it was just selling by itself. There was no real competitor. I mean, yes, there were other cars coming into the market, crossovers, but nothing really to dent its sales until now. And when I say until now, I'm talking about the last 1 year. So last 1 year, a few manufacturers decided we're going to knock on these people and, you know, take away some of that lovely sales figures. So first came the Mazda CX-3, which did quite well.
Yeah.
Good looking. But it was fully imported, so the price was a little bit high. But the Mazda had more kit on it. Then came the Subaru XV. Local assemble, very well priced. But again, you know, there's a little bit of enthusiasm when it comes to the Honda badge against the Subaru badge. Even though the XV had all-wheel drive and a bit more space, but people were drawn to the HR-V. Again, the Honda badge sells very well. Then came one of my personal favorites, which was the Toyota CHR.
The expensive one.
The expensive one. So when the Toyota CHR...
You live in a more expensive neighborhood than me.
Of course, Richard. I earn more than you.
Yeah, that's true.
So when the CHR was announced that it was coming, big noise in the market because everybody thought, knowing the HR-V price was from 99 to about 110, 112, they thought the CHR would be around the same price band because why would Toyota go and price it higher? Yeah. Also, it's the same size, almost same features, apple to apple, same engine, same width, length, height, everything else, crossover and all that. But Toyota decided to make it fully imported. They did not want to go into the local assemble game, which is what Honda was doing. And Honda had, I think, three variants in their lineup. Toyota had one, 150,000, take it or leave it. The CHR sold really well, despite its high price. So what did Honda do? Honda said, hey, you want to play with us? We play back, lah. So they launched a version called the RS. So what's the RS? Basically, you've got bigger wheels, you've got a new color chart, you've got a brighter interior, as you can see from the pictures. Of course, the pictures is black and white, but if you see on the website, the interior is basically like a light, very light beige. It's almost white.
It's almost what you would see in a brand new Mazda 3, isn't
exactly.
it?
No, and also white. CX-3.
Yeah. You know? So white, so bright and colorful.
Yes. And you know, a lot of people, immediately when they saw this, said, oh, so difficult to keep clean. You see, Malaysians always worry about keeping clean. Now, the reason is because Malaysians tend to be a little bit dirty in their cars. Some of them. You know, shoes, going hiking, coming into the car with the shoes. They don't change their shoes. Kids eating in the car. I don't let my kids eat in the car. This is the reasons for this. But they thought, we'll risk it and we'll do it. And it paid off. Now, with the RS, of course, the price has moved up to 124,000 ringgit. Now, at 124,000 ringgit, that's about a 10,000 odd premium against the previous top spec HR-V. But it's still 20,000 cheaper than the CHR.
Yeah.
Apple to apple, you've got one vehicle that has been in the market now for about 5 years. Another one which is brand new to the market. So why is the HR-V RS still very popular? Again, I say, the Honda badge. It's almost like, you can't knock this brand off the perch. You know what I mean? When someone says Honda, I want to own it. And the funny thing is, even when you go to expensive neighborhoods like where Richard lives, people can be driving luxury German cars. They'll still have a Honda as a second or third.
It's car. Funny That's you true. Say that because literally on the same street, on one side of the road, there's a Honda. Mm-hmm. And on the opposite side, there's an Audi A6.
Right.
Just opposite one another. Exactly. And they're constantly outdoing one another. One exactly. will sell one car, and then one will buy another one. And I walk up every week, and I'm like, what's this one got this week?
Right. You know, they're swapping and you're really observing them.
Yeah.
So you've got a lot of time on your hands.
Of course.
Good. Yeah. Good. I'm glad to hear that. The thing is, besides Richard having
Can
a lot of time
his
on
mic
his hands
off?
To watch his neighbor's car movement, this is the thing. The Honda badge has brought it up to a level, I would say, even above the Japanese when it comes to keeping up with the Joneses. So we took this HR-V out for test drive. And to be honest, it doesn't drive all that much better than the previous HR-V. It's a nice drive. It's firm. It's well-sorted. The bigger wheels and the wider tires do make a difference. It feels more planted. It feels more secure. Interior is a welcome sight because it feels more premium. The touch and feel points feel better. This is all just what I call a nip and tuck, but done in the right way. The additional 10,000, some people are going to ask me, is it worthwhile? I think if you're really taken by that HR-V shape, which is still fresh looking, why not? But if it was me, I would pay a little bit more and go for maybe the CX-3. Yes, the CX-3 is smaller, but I like the way the CX-3 looks.
What's the CX-3 selling for now?
About 136,000.
Ooh, that's a whole 12 grand more.
Yeah, but you see, when you're taking a 7-year loan, The difference is only a few hundred dollars, you know. And, you know, with the kind of money Richard earns, that's like, you know, not going to your premium coffee shop once a week.
Let's just, you know, just touch on this a second. The amount of money that Richard earns plus the amount of tax he pays. So but it adds up, you know, and it kind of is distributed well.
But okay. I'm not going to ask what your tax break is.
It's a lot.
Okay, so this HRVRS, it really looks pretty and it looks very, very
premium. I don't like the backside of it.
You don't like the way it looks.
No, I don't like the back of it, no.
Yeah. I think it looks really, really sporty.
But I ask you a question now, both of you. You've seen the car in the pictures. Mm. How many have you seen on the road?
None.
The RS version?
Yes.
Probably just one.
That's the thing. I've not seen many on the road. Mm. But actually, they're selling. You don't see many on the road because I think we've gone so familiar with the HRV. Even if you see an RS, you'll not notice it because it's the same shape. Mm. And this is one thing which I thought Honda maybe should have thought about, because if you're going to do something like this, if you're already going to charge an extra 10,000, if you charge an extra 15 and put a really nice Mugen body kit on it, then makes a difference. Because why? Then Richard will notice it, you'll notice it, and you'll say, oh, I've seen 15, I've seen 18, I've seen 20. Mm. You've probably seen one every day, but you didn't really capture your attention because there are just so many HRVs on the road already.
All right. So let's do the 6-point inspection then.
Okay.
Immediate competitors then.
Mazda CX-3.
Yep, as you said.
Subaru XV.
Yeah.
And the Toyota CHR, even though it's about 24,000 more expensive.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Oh. What did and didn't you like about it?
Okay, what I liked about it is the interior now looks a lot more premium. I mean, I can sit in that car now and not think it's a $120,000 car, which is good. But what I did not like is I don't see the point in buying this car if it looks from the outside exactly like the previous one. I mean, forget about the alloy wheels. You know, alloy wheels, anyone can edit. I think a body kit, an original Mugen body kit, would have done a lot to persuade me, a lot of other people, to say, hey, I want this, you know?
So what? It's missing the Mugen body kit, but what sort of extras do you get over the regular HRV?
Well, it's just the interior and the wheels and tires.
That's it.
And the badging.
Yeah.
And the color code.
So after all of this, is the CHR really worth 25 grand more?
Is it worth 25 grand more?
Because I can't see myself buying a CHR.
Okay, the CHR, the only reason why it's 25 grand more is because it's not local assembled. It's fully imported.
Right.
So
right.
If you're a person who says, I don't want a local assembled car, this is where you go. Also, when you look at a CHR, like it or hate it, it's just futuristic. You know, it stands out in any car park, in any color. Mm. It just says, whoa, you know, what car is that? I've seen people actually stare at that car. Even now, 6 months after it's been launched, people still stare at the car. People still look at it, especially when it comes in those nice, funky, bright colors.
Yeah.
But again, that extra 25 to 30,000 ringgit, it's for you to decide whether do you want something really different and do you want a fully imported Toyota?
Final inspection point, with rumors of the new Proton X50 coming out.
Right.
And imagine that in a higher spec.
I like where you're going with this.
Should you wait for that? Especially since it could come out this year, right?
It's definitely coming out this year. I know some journalists have already gone to Geely HQ to touch, feel and test it. Looking at the spec.
What do you mean some journalists? Why weren't you there?
I'm not important.
Oh. Then why have we got you here?
You've got me here because I'm cheap, Richard. Because they pay your salary.
Damn,
the guests have to come really cheap. Now, the new Geely is going to be something to be reckoned with. I'm going to say that simply because 1.5 turbocharged engine, top technology coming from Volvo. It's good looking. It's the same size. It's going to have that Geely warranty in after sales. 1 year ago, nobody's talking about Geely. 6 months ago, people started talking about Geely. Now people only talk about Geely. Their branding and marketing, top-notch. I'm talking as a global product.
Yeah.
Okay? So I'm talking about people, you know, when I go to the wet market, people who don't even talk to me about cars suddenly come up and say, hey, brother, you do cars right. This Geely car good. They're not talking about Proton, you know. They're talking about Geely. So you know the global branding has done their job. They've sent it out on the newspaper, social media, whatever. They've done well. And to answer your question, if I'm one of the four companies competing for this segment, I will be worried. Because their price is going to be definitely below 100,000. Definitely below 100,000.
I would imagine even if they introduced like the plug-in hybrid version, right, that would maybe be 110,000.
Even if it's 130,000, it's still going to be a scary competitor. But if they bring in the normal 1.5 turbo with all the bells and whistles at 99,888, for example, which I think will be below 100,000, they are going to really rock the market. Because what the X70 has done with the aging product, this one will just rock the market.
There you go, ladies and gents. That was Cruise Control for this week. We've spoken about Renault and FCA to merge, and the Mercedes-Benz CEO is retiring. That, of course, was the car review of the Honda HR-V RS. Thank you very much for tuning in. We'll be back soon. Don't forget, if you'd like to follow our Instagram page, it's available at
BFM Cruise Control.
This has been Cruise Control, the car show here in BFM. I've been in the studio with Daniel Fernandez. Say goodbye, Daniel.
Goodbye, and see you next week.
And, of course, the man with the news was Mr. Arif Roos. Say goodbye, Arif.
Guten Tag.
This has been Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.